right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome out with Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliff D. So another week, another loss. It's three straight. You know, you and I were talking before. Why don't we try to be as positive? See how I took a long time in saying that word, Cliff? Mm-hmm. Positive as possible. I mean, there were a few more positive than last week, but it's just way too many things that's killing the Owls. I mean, it's, where to start? Where to start? I mean, the good thing is Kevin Glenn started this week. I mean, as everybody knows, the Alouettes did lose to the Toronto Argonauts in their first ever game at BMO Field by the score of 30 to 17. And do you really, a 30-17 score? You know, sometimes you can see a score like that and say it's not really indicative of how the game actually went. Would that be a fair assessment for this week?
I would say so. In keeping with this positive theme, we do have a couple of positive notes. For example, I'm positive that the Alouettes can't get any worse. I'm positive that some changes need to be made, and I'm positive that we're going to keep this as positive as possible.
Well, I'm positive that the Owls are going to be playing on Friday, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. It was good to see Glenn back under center, and it's actually quite interesting to see the difference in how this team plays compared to how they are with Glenn under center and Cato last week. And even with the little bit that Cato came in when Glenn went down this week, which I thought it was a season ending thing, but we'll talk about that a little bit more. It just seems to be a difference between night and day between how these teams play. And I don't know, is it because of, you know, the way that Cato played last year? You know, he starts off fantastic the first game, and okay, to be fair, you know, nobody had any tape on him, so they weren't able to base, you know, any of their schemes and wild defensive schemes because they'd never seen him play. There's no film. But now, did they revert back? You know, last week when they played, did they revert back to stuff from last year? I'm sure they did. So why is that, Cliff? I mean, it's, why does it seem to be that with Glenn under center compared to anybody else, at least recently, and more recently Cato, why is it these teams seem to respond? They seem to be responding better with Glenn under center.
I really think it comes down to confidence. It comes down to the fact that Glenn has been there. He's done that. He knows what to do out there. Whereas Cato is still learning how to do that. Like, let's not forget that Cato is still very much a raw rookie. There's still a lot of learning left for him to do. Whereas Glenn, he's seen it all pretty much in this league. So I honestly believe that this team just has that sort of more of a calm demeanor when Kevin Glenn's under center, just because, again, he knows how to lead and he knows how to instill confidence, not just in himself, but also in his teammates as well. So I think that really does play a huge factor in there. Whereas Cato, if you're looking to him for leadership, like, well, he's never really had that leadership on a professional level. So he's kind of at a loss too as to how to be a pro. So it's going to take time for him to gel as well and for him to really develop as well. So I think it just makes a huge difference having someone like Kevin Glenn there, because again, he provides so much to this team, and there is a remarked difference when he's on the field. Situations where it looks like everything's falling apart, Glenn at least knows what to do so that he can minimize any sort of defensive liabilities or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas Cato, he's never encountered situations like this before, so it's understandable that he's going to possibly panic or just not make the right decision whatsoever. Like, how do you get mad at someone for not making the right decision if they've never been in that situation? Whereas Glenn, he's been there. He knows what to do. So, yeah, I definitely do think there's a huge difference, and very much a welcome difference as well, because at least now you know that with Glenn under center, it's not going to be perfect. He's going to make mistakes. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. But you still have that. If you're a player on this team, you know that with Kevin Glenn, what to expect. You know how to prepare accordingly. And I really do think that the team responds so much better to Glenn, if only for that veteran presence, if only because he's got the leadership down to a T. Mm-hmm. And it'll come eventually for guys like Cato or Brandon Bridge or Vernon Adams if they get the opportunity to lead this team, but it doesn't happen overnight, that's for sure. Like the winning doesn't happen overnight, the losing doesn't happen overnight. Everything takes time.
Yeah. Well, the Al started off well. It started off any better than that they would hope to. I mean, better than last week. I mean, considering how anemic they are when it comes to scoring touchdowns this year. I mean, they're up 8-0 after the end of the first. Everything seemed to be going well, and then they ran into some problems, summarily the second quarter. I think you put it pretty succinctly in your alternative this week is they ran into a ray of light, something to that effect. I mean, I think I'm paraphrasing, but
you pretty much nailed it. I mean, Ricky Ray, what more can you say? I made it very clear, like, this is a guy that also, like Kevin Glenn, knows how to win, and this isn't his first rodeo either. Like, Glenn for the most part has, I wouldn't say been owned by the Alouettes, but the Alouettes have had a lot of success against Ricky Ray. But in recent years, that tide has turned considerably. And you can say it's because the team, he's not facing the same Alouettes team as he was in years previous, which is true to a lesser degree. But again, Ricky Ray, you give him just one opportunity, he'll expose every weakness that you have. And that's what he does. He shredded Montreal for 3 touchdown passes. I mean, really, the only way you're going to stop a Ricky Ray is what the Alouettes did to him last night, is injure him and get him off the field. If they'd done that in the first quarter, perhaps this would have been a whole different story. But credit to Toronto. The offensive line protected him, gave him the chance to open things up. He stretched the Alouettes downfield and made them pay numerous times. And just when you thought that he had nothing left, you thought that this play was going to fall apart, boom, he finds a receiver like a Vidal Hazelton or Kenny Shaw, who had an absolutely spectacular catch in the second quarter. And yeah, that's what Ricky Ray does. And he's been doing it for years. And that's why, as long as Ricky Ray is healthy, you cannot count the Toronto Argonauts out. And it's really unfortunate because that injury now, we just found out he's going to be out for at least 3 to 5 weeks with a sprained MCL. And, well, it's next man up in Toronto, that's for sure. But
yeah, and they seem to be short on quarterbacks too, considering all their quarterbacks are now, you know, the ones that of some name are actually with other teams now in the CFL. Summarily hurt too, by the way. So it seems to be a broken record again in the CFL when it comes to main guys getting hurt. So the Argos dropped a 21-point spot on the Owls in the second quarter and closed out the half, leading by 21-9. And there in itself is another problem. You know, the Alouettes are having a huge problem when it comes to scoring in the first half. And you do that right away, you're going to have, obviously, unless your defense is playing absolutely amazing, you're going to be you're going to be at a point where you're just playing catch up the entire time, and more likely than not, you're going to lose. And to me, right now, this is actually a very telling stat. Since 2014, when the Alouettes score less than 10 points at halftime, okay, they have not only lost 8 straight, but they have lost 21 out of 40 games.
Yeah.
Sorry. They have done it 21 out of the last 40 games. I'm sorry, and their record in that period is 5-16.
Ugh. Well, and really, that's what it comes down to in this league. You've got to score. Yes, having a great defense is fantastic. There's no question that that's something that people crave. People want to see a good defensive battle, and if you've got an outstanding defense like what Montreal has had in years past, and even to a lesser extent what they've had this season. But at the end of the day, you still got to put points on the board. That's the name of the game. And if your offense is sputtering, and like I said, it go down 21-9, it's very difficult to catch up. I mean, I still got the sense, though, being down 21-9 at the half, it really felt like, okay, just one or two little plays going Montreal's way, and they're right back in this. And that's the beauty of the Canadian Football League, is that you can say that about any game. But with, let's say, with Montreal's offense now, like, just was the play calling or just people, the opposing teams being able to figure us out. Like I said, it's just one of those things that I really wish I could say conclusively what the reason is why Montreal's offense just isn't clicking the way it should be. And yeah, it's, as a fan, it's frustrating because you want to see points on the board. You want to see this team scoring touchdowns. And like I said, it's just it's tough. It's tough, and I'm trying to be positive, as is the theme of the show. We saw a lot from Daron Carter yesterday. Yep. And
a lot of positive stuff there.
Yes.
From Daron Carter. But I mean, to finish out the first half, they finished out the first half with a grand total of five first downs. Five first downs in the first half.
That's unacceptable. And especially, too, like the defense really did play well. They managed to stop former Alouette Brandon Whitaker in his tracks for the most part, and even caused a turnover as well.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, that was, again, you get these swings of momentum, and then you do nothing with them. Or you march down the field. Okay, you don't get in the score zone. That's fine. You try for a field goal. And then field goals to the left, to the right.
Yeah, that's something we'll talk about here, too. So so the second half itself started off well with a 61-yard touchdown to Daron Carter. And the Alouettes are back in the game. They were back by, I think at the time, what was the score at the time? It was 21-15.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became 21-16. You're talking about missing a field goal. Oh, sorry. 21-16 with a convert. But from there, it just went to hell in a handbasket again. And I think probably one of the biggest things that hurt the Alouettes in the second half was the pick by Glenn in the, what was it, fourth quarter?
Third quarter. And yeah, deep in the score zone, deep in the red zone, gets picked off. And
score zone. Careful there, Rod Black. Careful. Careful.
I'm a product of my environment, man. What can I say?
Yeah.
You listen to that guy too many times.
Could you at least emanate Chris Cuthbert, please?
I'll work on that.
Okay.
Or will I? No. Yeah. Okay. That's enough Rod Black out of me. Enough I'm Rod sorry. Black.
Yeah. So it's just from there, the Alouettes just could not, they were back into the game. They were driving. They were taking, basically, they were going to be, they were driving to take the lead. And then, no, nothing. The pick six really hurt. But the interception really hurt. It was just as bad as the pick six. It hurt them, and they didn't recover. They didn't recover. So, I mean, summarily, from there, the Owls lost, and they had a chance at the end of the game to score what many would have seen to be a meaningless touchdown. But it showed that they could move the ball, but yet something else seemed to bite them in the ass, and it was their clock management, which I don't get.
Oh, Herm Edwards couldn't believe the Alouettes had such poor clock management skills. I mean, that was terrible. Like, did they not realize that you got to step out of bounds to stop the clock, or get first downs to stop the clock, or even that? Like, it was frustrating. And then when you get to the 1 yard line, you finally decide to put Brandon Bridge in the game, put his length and his height to good use. And then you just get a broken play like that. And
yeah,
I don't know if that was by design or if it really just, the defense really just read him like a book.
I hope that wasn't by design.
I hope not too, but I mean, if you're trying to catch the Argos napping, I'm afraid you didn't. That was awful. And what do they have to show for it? Nothing.
No, nothing. No, and the clock management killed me. I mean, to me, during that entire last drive, the one play that I think typified the game in itself was, I think it was a catch by Nick Lewis, and instead of going out of bounds, he cuts back in bounds, and the clock continues to run. And even though there was a stoppage in play, how it's done in the CFL, but then the clock continues. So a lot of things went right for the Owls in this, but I think still, unfortunately, there are still a lot of things that went wrong in this game.
Yeah, I didn't really get the sense that it was as ugly a game as it was last week versus Hamilton. It was still bad. I mean, losses are still going to hurt no matter what, but I do feel like this one against Toronto, just it wasn't quite as bad. It's just, like I said, I guess maybe we're starting to get desensitized to it as far as watching how this team is unfolding. And it's hard because you gotta put blame somewhere. And who do you blame? You can't blame Kevin Glenn. He, by and large, played a really solid game. Daron Carter played really well. Nick Lewis, fantastic. Jovan Johnson, once again, the defensive units are clicking for the most part. I didn't feel they were on the field too long, so they weren't quite as gassed, but still. Penalties, though. The penalties from this defense those were like just not death by a thousand cuts for this team. It just killed any momentum. And every time you see it, flag on the play, you cringe because 9 times out of 10, you know it's going against you. And I'm not going to be one of these fans that says that, oh, the referees are against us. You know, they're biased against Montreal. It doesn't matter. Even if they were, you got to rise above that. You got to be able to put that aside and just focus on staying as disciplined as possible. And this is something that these defensive coaches too, like they're fantastic coaches. There's no question about that. But if you can't get these guys disciplined, then we're going to keep running into situations like that. And we deserve better, quite frankly. As fans of this team, we deserve better. And you can't just sit there and keep praising these coaches for being great defensive geniuses if you can't get this team disciplined, if the discipline isn't there. If you can't – a great play shouldn't be negated because someone was holding or there's a face mask or anything like that. I know some penalties can't be avoided.
Right.
But quite a few of them were avoidable. And just – like I said, just – it's frustrating. Yeah. And we want better for this team. There's no question about that. We want this team to do well. And I don't mind losing, but – you shouldn't be beating yourself. Let the other team beat you. Don't make it easier for the other team to score points on you, be better than you, and dominate you. I really don't think that's too much to ask from a football team.
No, hey, but on a plus, you know, it's good to see that Coach Pop actually challenged plays that were challengeable.
That's positive.
That is a positive.
Yeah, so, hey, we didn't get – I do recall there was one that was
– He was one for one. He was one for one in his challenges, yeah.
So there you go. So maybe stuff's starting to sink in now. Maybe now we're finally – maybe he's just on the right track now. So let's keep positive about that.
Yeah. Now let's go to – there are two things that we also need to talk about. First, we're going to talk about the Boris Bidde thing. And this is a guy who is – last year was kicking the balls out of the balls. And it seemed like he couldn't miss anything when it came to field goals. But this year, he's just average. He's below average, in my opinion. I mean, we all know the guy can kick a ton when it comes to punting the ball. But what has happened to him when it comes to his field goal kicking? I think what is he for the year? He's 5 for 12, I think, just off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What needs to be done? Is this the time now for the Alouettes to say, listen, we rarely, rarely, rarely have done this. We rarely have two kickers. You know, it's usually we can't afford a roster spot. Is it time to bring in another kicker just to show that, you know what, it is about a competition? You know, all the kickers that the Alouettes have had since they've returned have gone through this type of thing. If they may have had some problems. Baker went through it. You know, I'm trying to name some here. To name some of the kickers that are good kickers recently. Baker, I think, was the longest tenured one. Sean White. You know, so is it time now, Cliff? I mean, maybe they need to switch things up a little bit.
There's no question. I think it's one of those things that iron sharpens iron is how I've always looked at it. I mean, if there's no competition for Beattie, then we're just going to have to accept his standard and. Quite frankly, it is unacceptable. I mean, as good as he was last year, and he was absolutely fantastic. Like a lot of people were upset, myself included, that Sean White was showing the door because, in my opinion, you could have had both of these guys on the roster, and look how well White's done in Edmonton. So it was had nothing to do with him. I just think it came down to familiarity breeds contempt, and I think we're seeing that now with Bidde. He's not being challenged, and. Unfortunately, the results are starting to show. Like missing all these field goals is simply unacceptable. It's one thing to leave points on the field as far as touchdowns go, but now you're only getting rouges instead of actual field goals. I mean, this is
he is 5 for 12 so far in the season. So it's 40. He's at a 40% clip.
So as much as the Alouettes have rarely, I don't think they've ever really truly had two kickers dressed for a game. Having one doing both duties. I mean, unless you want to count Kyle Graves as a backup punter, although well, he's technically
we could have done the same thing when Damon Duval was here. There was another one just came to Damon Duval. When he got summarily kicked out, you know, Ben Cahoon came in his place for that infamous kick in overtime.
And we've seen that a few times where guys just will step up and have to kick, but it shouldn't have to be like that. I mean, I think at this point, I think it would do Bede and the team as a whole, special teams as a whole, a world of good just for a little while, maybe just to have someone concentrate solely on punting and solely on kicks. Like you said, Bede's punting, outstanding. Like, the guy can hoof the ball deep, and I would definitely like to see him stay in that role. But when it comes to field goals, I don't know if he's just got he's lost his mojo or what's going on exactly with him. Like, I got confidence that he'll get it back, but until then, it might not be a bad idea just to have a fresh set of eyes, so to speak, or in this case, a fresh set of legs,
yeah,
to come in and maybe help lighten his workload a little bit. At least this way, he wouldn't have to feel pressured to have to be the man in that sense. Because again, let's not forget, he's still very much a rookie as well. Last year, he had an outstanding rookie campaign, and they always talk about the sophomore jinx, and I'm starting to believe it, especially when it comes to him, because this year has just been maddening. Because like I said, we all expected him to do well. He was doing so good that, like I said, you replace a guy like Sean White, who, oh, by the way, went to Edmonton and won a Grey Cup. So He clearly wasn't the problem. White wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but he was certainly not the liability that some fans have made him out to be. So are we going to be saying the same thing a year from now about Boris Beattie? It's hard to say, but I think Montreal would be very well served to bring in someone to sort of help stoke that fire in him a little bit, because you got to believe that if he knows that other kickers are coming in, he's gonna snap out of it. I don't think it's gonna bring him down the way it would some people. I really think it would really strengthen his resolve, and it just knowing that someone is helping to come take some of the workload off of him, I think would make a remarked difference in the way that he prepares for the game and also how he approaches the game as a whole.
Well, I think you get somebody in there. I think it will. It'll light a fire under his ass. I mean, you know, Bede, sure, he's listed as being seventh overall in punting average, but that doesn't mean much, because if you look at it, you know, at four, what is he? I just had it in front of me. Where is? Oh yeah, so he's averaging 42.5 yards a kick, which is great. I mean, the highest in the league is Mayer in Hamilton at 50. So it's not much of a difference, you know. It's funny, the one that has lower than Bede is Shaw in Edmonton, and how do you pronounce his name again in Toronto?
Hyrulahu.
Okay, I was about to say hallelujah. so, yeah, something, yeah, I think something to, and I do not remember ever the Owls having, since they've returned, having two kickers on the roster for one game.
It's been a long time. And again, if the Alouettes are looking for a couple of names to draw from as far as the kicking pool, I can tell you right now, Delvert Alvarado, who used to play with the Alouettes and has been brought in a couple times, a couple training camps to sort of challenge for the job. He did really decent when he was with the Ottawa Redblacks last year. Not fantastic, and certainly wasn't good enough to keep. But I think in this situation, I think he would be a tremendous asset for the Alouettes if they had Alvarado kicking field goals, which he's done very well with, and just have Bede concentrate on punting for the time being.
Hey, Ottawa. Ottawa has a dual threat. They have two.
Yep. if you're looking for another name, Nick Boyd, who the Alouettes actually drafted a couple of years ago.
Actually, so does Edmonton. Okay, yeah.
Again, another very solid kicker as well. He was a former University of Manitoba product and played extremely well in his collegiate career. I think if he was brought back, again, same idea, just to sort of help, like I said, lighten the workload. I think that's really what it comes down to. I think Bede puts himself under a lot of pressure to do well, and I think maybe that's what's kind of aping him a little bit right now. So, I mean, like I said, if we just sort of take his mind off things a little bit, he's got to know that there's competition. He's got to know that his job isn't guaranteed, so he can't just be slacking off. But maybe just having another kicker there, someone who's sort of been there and done that, to sort of help him along. And like I said, I personally don't see any issue with that whatsoever. And I want to believe that he wouldn't either. I think he'd welcome the competition. And like I said, it just sometimes that's all it takes, is just to make you that much better, is to know that someone is, I wouldn't say gunning for you, but like just, you know, just to make you not complacent, I guess would be the term I'd want to use. And I do feel that Beatty has gotten a little complacent as far as his kicking goes. Punting is great for the most part, but these field goals, I mean, we just, it's going to be a bit much. All these missed field goals this season. I mean, it's still a young season, but I mean, if we stay on this trend right now, it's going to come down to, it's going to be a tight game where we're going to need a field goal to win. And if he's coming out to kick it, I got to be honest, I don't have that confidence that I would have even a year ago with this guy.
Right, right. Of the kicker, the teams in the league, Montreal, BC, Winnipeg, Toronto, I think that was it, just checking it real quickly, and Hamilton. So five of the nine go with one kicker. But it does show that teams are going, that there are teams are willing to go with a dual, you know, a combo of kickers, and it's working well. Mm-hmm. Hence, who's top of the league in field goals and converts? Cliff, Sean White.
Yep.
Sean White. So,
you know what? You know what? He doesn't have to worry about his punting, which was always one of those things that people sort of harped on him for. Mm-hmm. It was very rare that he'd brick a field goal really bad. It was always the punting that people sort of dogged him with when he was with the Alouettes.
Yeah.
But now he doesn't even have that worry anymore. And you know what? There's a remarked difference there. Now he's got someone else that worries about the punting in Edmonton. He can just focus on field goal kicks. And guess what? Dude's been money. You should see the love that this guy is getting from fans in Edmonton. And I think a lot of it really comes down to is that he's not being asked to do everything when it comes to kicking a football. He just has to focus on one thing and one thing only. And that's just getting those 3 points on the board. Again, he's not perfect. I believe he's missed once or twice this season. But for the most part, he's been steady. He's got a great leg. A 50-plus yard field goal. No big deal for Whitey. He's like I said, he's one of those guys that, on a personal level, I definitely miss having on the LOS. But, I mean, look at his kicking. I mean, if they had Betty, if last year they went with Betty for punting, so he sort of learns the ropes a little bit, and then kept White on for kicking field goals, I'm telling you, that would have, that could have made a serious difference for this LOS team last season.
Yeah.
But as they always say, hindsight's 20/20.
The next thing happened to be that happened something that happened about nine. I don't want to be too specific, but at 9 minutes and 37 seconds of the third quarter, Kevin Glenn goes down, and he goes down hard. And I'm watching the game with a friend of mine, and I saw the way he goes down, and I thought, you know, I think you and I saw this differently, but we saw him go down, and I thought it was a collarbone. Just by the way, because I'd seen it enough in the NFL when you have a big guy land on you like that. You're gonna hit hard, and you may hurt. You may break something. Mm. But you mentioned that you saw another thing too, and I think it was noticed by the TSN crew also that I think he was, I guess somehow he was holding his leg in some way, shape, or form. I think
he was favoring his knee, his left knee on the when he was down on the ground. Like he was planted, and I see where you're coming from with the collarbone because I see his jersey just sort of akimbo. As though someone had just kind of grabbed him and just sort of tried to tear his arm off. But when he hit the ground, he was favoring his leg. So that was my concern really was that, again, kind of like what happened to Ricky Ray, that he might have blown a wheel somewhere. But, well, lo and behold, it was all for naught because he was out for at least one series. And then
yeah, he went straight to the locker room because I know Didier from RDS mentioned it on Twitter. And I know I retweeted it and I'm thinking, oh, it's bad. And then comes the interesting part. And I know we talked about this previously while we were doing the pre-show and whatnot. I happen to tweet, can we just go ahead and sign trade for Drew Tate now. And your comment was, what was your comment there, Cliff?
I said, you shut your whore mouth.
In all capital letters. I was like, what the hell?
I apologize.
Your reason behind it, and you kept it from me, from I guess specifically, so you wouldn't have to regurgitate it again, since we're doing the show now. But why not? Now you understand my reasoning. We want to have an experienced quarterback who has played well. We've seen him how well he did play. You know when he was starting, and Bo Levi wasn't. What Why do you not think Drew Tate would have been a good person to trade for? I guess that's the best question, or a good fit for Montreal.
Guy is a career backup, and he relishes the role of being a career backup. And that's what I can't stand about him. Any success he has been riding the coattails of someone else. He had he did manage to replace Henry Burris. Burris was injured, I believe it was, I want to say 2011 or 2012. No, it was 2011, sorry, when essentially he got shown the door. And Drew Tate was supposed to be the great white hope in Calgary, and it didn't quite pan out, and that's how Bo Levi Mitchell ended up taking over eventually there. But for me, I've always found that Drew Tate's attitude is he's just happy to get by. And quite frankly, I think we've had enough of that with the Alouettes. I find that there's some people have just been happy to get by, and I just don't see that leadership in Drew Tate, and I just don't see him being the solution as far as quarterbacking goes here in Montreal. I'm sure he's a nice guy. He had a great collegiate career playing for the University of Iowa, had a couple of memorable moments there, and again, he does have a Grey Cup ring, but I mean, in 2014, I could have had a Grey Cup ring with the Calgary Stampeders if I was in Drew Tate's role. Let's be honest. The guy is not what I would consider to be leadership material. And quite frankly, I'd rather roll the dice with one of these younger quarterbacks and take those lumps than with someone who, one, can't seem to stay healthy when he was playing, and two, relishes the role of being in a backup position. So we don't need that kind of attitude on this team. I think we've dealt enough with that in the past. And yeah, I'm sorry. If that makes me a hater, then I guess I'm a hater, but Drew Tate, I would be beside myself if the Alouettes went and traded for Drew Tate, quite frankly. That's my opinion. Take it or leave it, but I just don't think that Drew Tate would be the solution for the Montreal Alouettes when it comes to the quarterback situation.
I mean, you have basically a guy who's one of the, you know, according to Looney Cap, which is, if nobody hasn't been to it yet, it's a site that is able to collect information based on what the salaries are being made by the CFL players. He's making $300,000 as a backup. Mm-hmm. Now that I know how much he's being paid, and now how I know how the Owls have no room on their cap to have somebody. I guess it's sort of a, you know, and I bet you they would say to us that well, we already have 7,000 or 8,000 more quarterbacks on the roster. So, I'm sorry, I exaggerated a little bit. Sorry, I exaggerated on the number a little bit. Sorry.
And how comfortable would you feel having a $300,000 backup quarterback?
That too. Well, that's the thing. That's what he is right now.
Yeah. Hey, nice work if you can get it. Dang, I'd do it for half the price. To sit and hold a clipboard? Absolutely. Or trot out onto the field once in a while to try and plunge for a yard? I want to believe I could do that much, if nothing else. And that's what you get. You're paying this guy for? I mean, this team needs leadership at quarterback. That's why you go out and you get a Kevin Glenn. And we got him for a song, essentially. And I couldn't have been happier with that predicament. But if we went and got Drew Tate, oh my God, I'd be cringing. Let's put it that way. It hurts to think. It hurts to think about it. Like I said, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's a salt of the earth kind of fella. But I mean, his injury histories and just his general attitude as far as the backup position goes, I don't know. Backing up Bo Levi Mitchell might be the best job in the world, and he's got to be relishing in that. But you take a look at Calgary, their situation, like they've got a young Canadian quarterback that they seem to eventually want to bring along, and they're doing it slowly but surely. And I guess in that sense, I think Tatum sort of knows his role. So he's not going to, you know, make any waves or, you know, clamor for playing time or anything like that. I think he's just happy just to sort of coast and keep cashing them checks, man. That's what it all comes down to.
Right. I was about to say it could be worse. I mean, it could be poor Winnipeg. You know, you got Drew Willey who's being paid around $410,000, and he's a walking mash unit. I mean, it's just, you know, this week they're having to change. You know, I think they were saying that Matt Nichols is probably going to start. If I remember, did I hear right?
That's correct. Yeah, Matt Nichols has a start this Thursday against Edmonton, a team that he used to actually play for. So something's got to give with Winnipeg as well, because they've been very inconsistent, and I think their head coach, Mike O'Shea, is starting to feel the heat, especially since Paul Lapolis is sitting right there. But it's kind of funny. I'm seeing a lot of parallels with the offensive coordinator situation in Winnipeg as we do here in Montreal, because both Anthony Calvillo and Paul Lapolis came in highly touted, and they haven't exactly delivered on what they were supposed to. So, and again, a lot of people are still very much clamoring for both of those guys to become the head coach of their respective teams. But at this point, would you really want that?
Yeah, but Lapolis has been a head coach.
Absolutely, he's been a head coach.
We know Lapo has. I mean, he had pretty good success.
But would he have that same success right now? Like, if they get rid of Mike O'Shea, which is a very distinct possibility, if Winnipeg gets destroyed by the Eskimos, and there's a fairly decent chance of that happening, there's a lot of talk that perhaps that would be Mike O'Shea's last game. And in which case, yeah, Lapolis would slide right into that head coaching role. But would he have that instant success that he did when he had Swaggerville back in 2011 and went all the way to the Grey Cup? I don't see it happening right away. I think it'll be another one of those. And I feel sorry for our friends in Winnipeg, but yet another rebuild for this Blue Bombers organization.
Now, it seems like a lot of teams are going through the rebuild process. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at the list here, the Alouettes in the quarter. Obviously, Kevin Glenn's making the most on the Owls thing. And then Jonathan Crompton second. I just don't get it.
Well, at least it doesn't count on the cap.
Huh?
It doesn't count on the cap.
Well, no, not at the moment. Makes you wonder if Crompton will be coming off the sixth game, because we're coming up on it again. Two games for the Owls. He'll be eligible to come off. Will they place him back on the sixth game?
Well, and again, as much as, like I said, it's very important to get the rookie quarterbacks their reps and get them developed. I mean, Crompton is a veteran. He's a young veteran, but he's a veteran. Like, would, if something were to happen to Kevin Glenn, would that be a viable option for Montreal, is to go back to the Jonathan Crompton? Well, I would honestly be curious to see if that would happen.
Yeah, they have enough that they could use for trade bait if necessary. And as I said, the Owls are really tight on the cap. And from what I'm seeing here, it's not as bad as it was. It looks like Winnipeg is even worse on the cap at the moment. They may actually be over the cap. But yeah, I don't know. It's a thing that we're going to continuously talk about. I mean, we need to look at, if possible, we can try to, you know, we were joking about it, but we try to need to look at some of the positives for this team. And, you know, it's one thing or another. And, you know, the defense was able to show some of its strength this past week, which is a plus, obviously. But they didn't seem to be as gassed, but the only issue is that there were small breakdowns on offense this week. So, no, come on, Kevin Glenn, don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. No more inflammation of the eyes. If you have to wear those masks to bed, do so.
Yeah, if you got to sleep in a hyperbaric chamber,
there you go.
You know, just bubble wrap yourself.
Yeah.
When you're out and about in public, you might look silly, but you know what? If it protects you, I'm all for it.
Supposedly,
and no one's going to complain.
I think bubble wrap now, from what I'm understanding, it's a rumor that I'm hearing that it's going to be a CFL mandate that all quarterbacks have to be wrapped in bubble wrap.
I'm all for it. I mean, like, when you consider the amount of injuries, I would guarantee you pretty much every CFL general manager would be on board with that, especially if you're paying a guy X number of dollars to lead your team and he gets banged up on a fluke play or something like that. Yeah, I'd want my quarterback in bubble wrap too, and just, you know, almost keep him in a glass case just to make sure that he stays
glass
safe.
Case. See, that's not the fun thing about it, though, Cliff. You have to understand that. If you actually have your players wrapped in bubble wrap, right? We know the best part of it. You're going to want the guy to get sacked. Everybody loves bubble wrap. Everybody loves bubble wrap. It's like one of those things you hold in your hand, and you hold in your hand and you're like, oh, listen to the pop.
Yeah.
Sack him. So it's, you know what? Bubble wrap. You know, it's the next big thing.
And you know what? A lot of folks down in the States are watching CFL right now because of the limited partnership with ESPN. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine you're watching a game in, say, I don't know, Des Moines, Iowa. You happen to flip on, hey, there's football on. And you see a guy wrapped in bubble wrap and gets sacked. people would lose their minds. People would be like, oh my God, I have to watch this.
I got a feeling it'd be the other way around. It'd be like, click.
I don't know. Click. I don't know. I think there's something there to it. I think this is something that's worth exploring. I think we need to get a study on this.
Oh, yes. Let's. Yes. let's do that. And I can't believe we actually brought, we actually did a segment on bubble wrap as serious as we did. But hey.
We're here to entertain, folks.
Yes. Yes. We're here to entertain. Speaking of entertain, if you happen to miss any part of this show or of any of our other shows, you can head over to our archives over at Podbean, over at iTunes, and over at Google Play Music. Also, do not forget that you can contact us at our email address at alouettespodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget our Facebook page at Alouettes Flight Deck and Twitter at Alouettes FL Deck. We have it's history this week, and it's not because Saskatchewan's coming to town. We got history that's going to be done this week in Montreal for the game versus Saskatchewan, even though it is a short week. And I don't want to go over the numbers of how bad the Alouettes are or any team is when it's coming off of a short week. Luckily for us, Ottawa, what was it? Did Ottawa tie? They tied. So at least they didn't lose on their short week. But we got, besides Saskatchewan coming in, we are going to be having something that should have been done a long time ago, in my opinion. And I honestly think that it probably should have been done at the same time that AC had his done. What's happening this weekend or this week?
Well, we've got a few numbers retired for the Alouettes, but the one number that hadn't been retired for the longest time is finally going to be retired. The number 86 that Ben Cahoon has worn only for Montreal. He's never played for any other team other than the Montreal Alouettes. That number 86 will be, well, I guess not really raised to the rafters because it's an open-air stadium, but it will be immortalized this Friday. And yeah, like you said, this was a long time coming. This should have been done a while ago, but better late than never. At least now our man Ben is definitely going to join Anthony Calvillo and so many other legendary Alouettes as true legends of the Montreal Alouettes. And the idea that someone could even possibly wear number 86.
Which just, somebody did in preseason. I think it was as early as 2 years ago. All of us were like, what the hell's going on?
Oh, yeah. I had a laugh because when Ben came back here for his for the Hall of Fame induction, they actually did the Hall of Fame weekend here in Montreal. And there was a little meet and greet. I actually got to see Ben, and I had mentioned this to him, and he was actually very surprised. Like I said, the best way to get a training camp, the best way to get a fan riled up is just, oh, hey, look, someone's wearing number 86. And yeah, people would lose their minds about this, and with good reason. And even Ben was a little taken aback, like, really? I can't help but wonder if that sort of led to the discussion of, well, maybe we need to talk about getting that number retired, because I want to believe that there's no possible way the Alouettes would have ever given number 86 to anyone on a full-time basis. But just the idea that someone could wear it in training camp, if it didn't sit well then, it sure as heck's not going to sit well in a regular season game. So it's been taken out of circulation unofficially since Ben decided to hang up his cleats, but the fact that this Friday it's going to be made official that no one else will ever, ever wear number 86 again, I really do feel like a major wrong has been righted by this Montreal Alouettes franchise.
Yes, and props to the organization for reaching out to the longtime season ticket holders, myself included, who have been asked if we want to witness the ceremony and to experience all the pomp and circumstance, whatever you want to call it, by allowing us to be on the field during the actual ceremony itself. So I've actually never been in the stadium, or been on the field while there are fans in the stadium. So it's going to be one heck of an experience. And, if there are any other fans out there that have experienced this type of thing or are Alouette season ticket holders and have been asked to do it, just shoot me an email, and I'm sure we're only going to all meet up in one spot. So I mean, it's it's going to be very interesting. And obviously, I mean, it's, I'm sure somebody, you're like yourself, Cliff. I mean, you're, I know you're not a season ticket holder, but I'm sure this would be something that you wish that yourself too, because being, you know, I know you've been a longtime fan, but I'm sure this is something that I'm sure you yourself could wish that you could experience too. So it's, you know, all the more reason for some people to become season ticket holders, right?
Mm. And I just think too, like, even if you're not going to be on the field for this moment, just the fact that you're going to be in the stadium taking this in is, it's going to be amazing. Like, there's one thing that Montreal does really well, like the entire city of Montreal, when it comes to their sports teams, when it comes to honoring their legends, Montreal organizations, they get it. And I still remember a couple of years ago when Anthony Calvillo had his number 13 retired. It was incredible. It was the emotions were
13 on the field and stuff like that. That was the coolest thing. The 13-yard line on each end of the stadium. That was pretty cool.
Yep. And it was on October 13th against, again, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, who are infamous for their 13th man. I mean, it was absolutely perfect. It was a great moment. And yeah, I definitely anticipate, I don't think there'll be very many dry eyes in the house this coming Friday. Just fans that grew up watching Calvillo, that know his story, know the success that he has brought to this Elwoods team. I mean, he's won 3 Grey Cups in Montreal. The numbers speak for themselves. And being one of the premier receivers in this league for so long, I'm so happy that in addition to being a member of the Hall of Fame, that he's going to finally have number 86 retired. It's going to be an amazing night on Friday.
Yeah. If you haven't gotten tickets, make sure you get them. I don't know what's currently available. Like, I think you just head over to Ticketmaster or admission, or go to the Owls website and get your tickets if you can make it. And the weather's supposed to be nice. But besides that, also, Cliff, we have a game to talk about too. And, you know, the last time that these two teams met, they were basically also Rans. They met in the last game of the season last year. The game went to overtime in a nothing game. Brandon Bridge got the start. They lost in overtime. The Owls lost in overtime. It just seems so far that all the changes, you know, all the bringing of the, all of the coaching staff from Edmonton to Saskatchewan really has not so far. It just goes to show that you just can't bring a coaching staff in and immediately start winning.
No, it's going to take time. You can't not believe in Chris Jones, because the guy has proven he's a winner everywhere he's gone. I mean, and a former Alouettes coach too, I might add. But where Chris Jones goes, so does winning. But it's not going to happen overnight. And anyone who's upset with the work that he's done so far in Saskatchewan, I would say patience. It's going to take time. It doesn't happen overnight. The fact that he's brought back if not all of his staff from Edmonton over to Saskatchewan, but the lion's share of it, the fact that there's that cohesion helps tremendously. And the fact that he's got player personnel decisions that all goes through him, it's definitely his show. There's no question about that. The success that this team has is definitely, or the failure, is going to be a direct result of Chris Jones. And I definitely think it's going to work eventually. It's still going to take time. I think what's not helping the cause right now is same issue that's been happening with Montreal and every other team, is injuries. They've had a few injuries. Darren Durant won't be playing in this game. It'll be Mitchell Gale, who got his first CFL start last week against Ottawa and
played very well.
Extremely well. So, I mean, there's something to be said about the quarterback factory that is the Toronto Argos, because it was actually the Argos who shipped Mitchell Gale to Saskatchewan in exchange for Sean Lemon. And
oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So, I mean, that was a trade that kind of worked out for both teams when you think about it. But Mitchell Gale will definitely want to prove that he's no fluke. And again, beating Ottawa, I mean, even though it came down to those dying seconds, essentially, and it was just barely a win, but a win's a win, and they've got that positive momentum now, and they're going to be bringing that to Montreal. And again, with Montreal losing the way they did this past Monday, I should say, if I'm Saskatchewan, if I'm a Riders fan, I'm feeling really good right now. Maybe not cocky necessarily, because you still got to play the game, but if when it comes to the positive momentum, Saskatchewan's got it, and right now Montreal doesn't. So, I mean, something's going to give, and it'll definitely make for an entertaining game, that's for sure.
What do you think? Now, obviously, with having a game yesterday, as we were taping on the Tuesday, the Owls have a short week. They have one practice. One. And this is just a quirk that I hate within the CFL. I despise. You know, it just so happens that I think both Ottawa and Montreal have it this year. But, I mean, to have three games in 12 days. Mm-hmm. And on 4 days rest alone, 4 days rest is ludicrous. And if anybody remembers what happened to the Alouettes last year on 4 days rest when they went into Ottawa and got their asses handed to them, you know, it doesn't bode well. Now, on the plus side, I will say is this. On 4 days rest, Cliff, the Alouettes are 12-18-1. So
it's not terrible. It's obviously not good, but it's, I guess if you want to use, like, if you want to use stats to prove something, I mean, that's proof that there's still a chance. I mean, would my opinion have been different had Ottawa beaten Saskatchewan? Possibly, but just like I said, the fact that Saskatchewan has played by and large really good football, a lot, they're not nearly as bad as what their record indicates. If nothing else, they've actually been able to put points on the board, which is more than I can say for Montreal. That's for sure. I mean, take a look at the weapons that Saskatchewan has. This Roosevelt kid, my word, that's a stud happening right there. I can definitely see Jovan Johnson being assigned to stay on this guy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Big time. And he's going to have to, because he's got to be able to neutralize. I mean, we'll see how good Mitchell Gale is against a defense that, you know, is, again, still one of the tops in the league, but at the same time, do they have the necessary weapons to really chip away at Montreal's defense, the Riders do? I guess we'll find out, but I think we'll see this coming Friday. I think we're going to see if Mitchell Gale is the real deal, or was he just in the right place at the right time?
Right. The Owls, by the way, for those, the Owls versus Saskatchewan at home, they are 12-3 over the last 15 games. So they do have a good record versus Hamilton, versus Saskatchewan at home. And the losses have been close. They've been close losses, the ones that they have had. So,
and there's something about, maybe it's because of the whole Grey Cup matchups in 2009, 2010. There just seems to be, I won't call it a rivalry per se, but there's something that fans at Percival Molson Stadium just get, they blow up for this game. They get excited for this game. And the noise level in previous games has been almost ear-shattering. And I'm expecting to see a lot of that, especially too, like with all the emotion that's going with the Ben Cahoon night and everything like that. I do think if this game may not be sold out, which to me it would be absolutely a travesty if this game isn't sold out. But again, I definitely think it'll be well attended. I definitely think the fans will bring the noise, and I'm definitely looking forward to it, because there's just something about playing the Riders in Montreal that, like I said, it just brings out the best in these fans at Molson Stadium. And it really proves that this may not be the biggest stadium, but you get these fans amped up enough, good things are going to happen. And I am looking forward to it no matter what.
Yeah, it'll be I'm looking forward to the game. I'm just looking forward to a good game. And I think that's the main thing. And if anybody happens to notice, I keep on shying away from making any prediction for these games over the last couple weeks. So I'm like, screw it. I'm not going to make any more predictions. I think I made the biggest prediction at the beginning of the year, what I thought the Owls were going to be. And so far, I've been pretty off on that. But it's early. It's still early yet. And can still show frustration, but it is what it is, right? So
it is what it is. And again, even this past Monday, there's a lot to be negative about for sure. Because again, losses tend to have that sort of feeling on you, but it really wasn't as bad as it could have been. I was predicting a lot worse, especially too. You're going up against one of the elite quarterbacks in this league versus a guy who's a backup essentially, and that's what it was versus Hamilton. Like, that's why that loss really stung. Was, I'm not saying that Jeremiah Masoli is a bad quarterback, but you can't compare Jeremiah Masoli to Ricky Ray. I mean, it's not even a fair comparison. So to lose to Ricky Ray kind of stings a little bit less than it does losing to Jeremiah Masoli. And I definitely think there was a marked improvement overall with the team with Kevin Glenn under center. And Kevin Glenn, too, I think he'll be motivated as well, because don't forget, this time last year, he was actually playing for the Riders and doing very well for the most part, despite the losses. And that's the thing, is that the losses that Saskatchewan suffered last year, it wasn't because of offense. It wasn't because Kevin Glenn was quarterbacking. It really came down to a really bad defense. And I think now with both Kevin Glenn and even Jacques Chaptelin, who was the OC in Saskatchewan last year, now as a member of the Montreal coaching staff, if those two get together and can make some magic happen, I mean, I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I definitely think this, like you, I don't want to make any predictions as well. I don't want to guarantee a victory or a loss or anything like that. But I definitely think this has the potential to be a really fun night in Montreal. At least I'm hoping that's what it's going to be. At the end of the day, that's all we can hope for, is a good, fun football game. It's going to be amazing because of the whole Ben Cahoon show, if you will, or the pageantry of having his jersey retired. And I think this team is going to get itself to just hyped up enough so that, not in our house, we're not losing to these guys in our house, not tonight anyways, not with everything that's going on. That's got to be the mindset, is there is no effing way that these guys are going to come in here and show us up. And I really hope that's the attitude these guys have, the Alouettes do. And yeah, I'm excited. There's just, I can't stress how excited I am for this game on Friday.
Yeah, it should be good. Again, hoping for a good game, and I think that's the best we can hope for. So, again, if you haven't gotten your tickets, head over to MontrealAlouettes.com and get your tickets and join us for some history in the making, and watch Ben Cahoon become the 11th player in Alouettes history to have his jersey retired. So, Cliffy, I will see you at the stadium on Friday. Get ready.
Oh, like I said, I'm hyped. I'm hyped for this game. And yeah, there's just something about playing at home. And again, if Saskatchewan can win their first game at home, if the Toronto Argos can win their first game at BMO Field, why the heck can't we win our first game of 2016 this coming Friday? Knowing everything that's going to be happening, fans, I implore you, we've got to make this a sellout. I will be very, very disenfranchised if this game is not sold out, if only just to show the respect mm-hmm. that a legend like Ben Cahoon, and who he deserves to have a sold-out crowd cheering him. Do you know how I'm already thinking about the Cahoon ringing through my ears? And yeah, I got goosebumps, man.
We'll be back next week, guys. If you have anything that you want to comment to us, shoot us over an email or talk to us over our Facebook page, and we will try to answer it or be able to try and do it. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy Day, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.